Hello, this is Sharon Steitler, the bird chick, and I am here with non-birding Bill.
Hello.
And it's our goal to podcast because, criminally, I have been...
You've been traveling a lot.
I've been traveling a lot. Let's see, since the last podcast, I've been in California, Oregon, Texas, mm-hmm. Harlingen, and Corpus Christi. A very brief stop in Driscoll. And by a brief stop, I mean I got pulled over by a cop at a purposeful speed trap.
Leadfoot.
No, I get cruise control when I rent vehicles because I pay the extra money because I just know I'm not going to pay attention to that stuff.
Right.
And so it was like...
That stuff meaning... The speed limit.
Well, the problem is, you know, you look at a bird. And,
right.
But, no, it was a spot where it's like less than... It's a purposeful speed trap.
So wait, you see a bird and cruise control keeps you on the road.
It keeps me at a reasonable speed. Uh-huh. It keeps me within the speed limit. But anyway, I go to great lengths to not speed. Right. And, no, it's just a spot where, like, in less... Like, in a half mile, you go from 70 miles an hour to 40.
Ah.
And he nailed me right at the 40. I even went the next day through the same town, and I was like... Mm-hmm. Because he was like, I clocked you going 56 miles an hour. And I was like, okay, I know I was slowing down, but there's no way I was going 56. So, anyway, I'll just see it. It's just going to be like a lovely extra tax for all the great friends I've made in the Rio Grande Valley and all the cool birds I've seen. I am going to try and fight it, but I think it's kind of hard for... I think they just see a rental car.
Oh, sure.
Because I told him, I was like, I'm sick, and it's a car I'm not used to, and I was trying to slow down. He was having none of it.
Right.
And I couldn't even do that thing like in Cannonball Run. I wasn't wearing my jumpsuit.
See, this is why people say you're a bad feminist. All right, so what stories do we have to talk about?
We have so many stories to talk about. Actually, I should talk a little bit about the really cool thing that I've been to. I went to the Winter Wings Bird Festival in Oregon. I think you would like Klamath, Oregon. Klamath Falls is where I was.
I had that for a while, but then the doctor gave me an ointment and it cleared
up. No, it's actually really cool. It's a bald eagle and tundra swan festival.
Say, that does sound like it's interesting to me.
But no, it's really... So when you're a guide at a bird festival and you don't live in the area, typically what they do is they partner you up with a local guide.
Okay.
And that person knows the area really well. And you're just kind of the host and you help point out the birds. And if you have time, you try to go out ahead of time to see these birds. So that way you don't sound like a complete idiot
when
you get out there.
Sure, I get it.
So we're going out with him.
Well, you don't know the area, but you know the birds.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So we're going out the day before and just kind of looking at sites, and it's kind of fun because I can digiscope and not have to worry about sharing my scope. Mm-hmm. And because I love sharing my scope. I don't want that to sound like I don't want people. I definitely want people to use my scope and digiscope with it.
Right.
But it's just kind of fun to, you know, just do that on my own. But our guide was just really great. He's just this really quiet guy. And, so we're driving out to a potential spot for digiscoping, and he's like, you want to see a dilute plumage bald eagle?
Hey, kids, you want to see a dead body?
The only answer to that question could be yes.
Of course, yeah.
But no, it was this really cool thing. I had seen pictures of this bald eagle on Facebook, and essentially what it looked like, someone had taken a bald eagle and washed it with a bunch of whites with a tiny bit of bleach.
Okay.
I mean, it looks like a regular bald eagle.
Oh, yeah. It looks like you put an Instagram filter on it.
Yes. That's exactly what it looks like.
That's what I thought when I saw the photo.
Yeah, but I wanted to see it because it's like, I've seen pictures of this bird. This is so cool. So, yeah, we went to go see it. But, okay. So, when we're doing the field trip the next day, it was billed as kind of like a digiscoping field trip. And then I also said, you know, tell people this is kind of a laid-back birding trip. Because that's the nice thing about digiscoping is that you can take your time with birds. It's not, we're not going to be tagging everything. You're not listing if you're birding with me. You can try to list, but I really don't, that's not what I'm about. I want to take time and look at cool birds. So the one thing that you may not want to hear though when you're leading a field trip is all of a sudden halfway through it in the back of the car is someone talking about what they do, and they're like, oh, I'm president of the American Ornithologists Union. And it's just like, oh crap, pressure's on with this field trip. So she was actually really quite nice.
Did she start talking about how every single bird was in danger of extinction?
No, she didn't. Actually, it was really funny. She talked about the ridiculousness of how the white-breasted nuthatch is probably going to be divided into 6 different species. Not that it's that ridiculous in and of it, but just like how bananas it is. And when you go to certain areas, I get it. I mean, the nuthatches, the white-breasted nuthatches, actually in Klamath, are quite different than, at least in tone and behavior, than the ones we have out here in Minnesota. But it was just like, So, you know, she kept saying, you know, I'm not a lister. I don't care about this stuff. And so I'm trying to find birds that, you know, we can see. And it was also difficult because it was really windy and rainy, which mm-hmm. is terrible for a photography workshop. So we go for the dilute plumage bald eagle. We go for, the other cool thing about Klamath is they have all these dark morph raptors out there. So, like, you're not just seeing red-tailed hawks. You're seeing, like, super dark red-tailed hawks. You're not just seeing a ferruginous hawk. You're seeing a dark morph ferruginous hawk. Is that the dog?
Yeah, I'm... if you're used to hearing the sounds of Kabuki or cockatiel, I am currently dog-sitting for a friend, so you may hear a very lovely Labrador mix in the background instead of the tingling.
And we have to say the name of the dog is Vicious.
Yeah.
Which I dislike walking the dog.
It's like when you name a really big guy Tiny.
Yeah, because she's not vicious at all. No, she's quite opposite. But it's hilarious because, like, you know, you're walking her and someone goes up to pet her and you're just like, okay, be good, Vicious. And it's like, yeah, I'm really sorry. It's like the ridiculousness of having to walk dogs who wear sweaters.
She's a lab pointer mix, which is really funny because she thinks she should chase squirrels. So she's super interested in them, and then the pointer kicks in, and she just, like, lifts the paw and stares at them. Confuses the squirrels more, I think, than being chased does.
Yeah.
All right, so let's get back to it.
Okay, so anyway, so, you know, we're fine. And she finally says, it's like, yeah, I'm not a lister, so I really don't care about this stuff. I would rather just, like, look at some snow geese or something. And we're more interested in behavior. And I was like, we're looking at dark morph birds. This isn't even listing. Listers would be angry with me because we're on like a second or third ferruginous hawk. And I was like, this is a really interesting thing. And I guess the guy that was her, that was the dog, not us.
Yeah, sure it was. Totally the dog.
If you heard a belch, that was this dog.
Yep, totally the dog.
But anyway, the guy who taught her, and I can't remember his name, and he's like a really famous ornithologist in his own right. If you've read ornithology stuff, you've read his
name. John James Audubon?
No, he's not that old. He's quite old, but not that old. But he kept, every time it's like, hey, here's this dilute eagle, isn't this cool? Or here's this thing. It's a mutant. If you want to see a mutant, that's okay, but it's a mutant. I don't know why we're caring about a mutant. He just cracked me up. He hassled me the whole time. I wish I could hire him to come with me on all field trips because he was like, that's a mutant. He was just ornery, and I mean, he had a lot of great bird information. So.
Did he have chewing tobacco that he would spit into a spittoon and would go pa-ting?
That's the only possible way he could have been better. But yeah, I was just like, wow, this is the first time I've ever had this on a trip. Is like, I am the president of the American Ornithologist Union. Ew. Although I did hear that someone else had pressure at the same festival last year because apparently, oh crap, who's the guy that did the thing?
Oh, that guy?
Craven? Wes Craven.
Yeah.
But he has
the guy who did the thing, Wes Craven. Wes Craven has done many things.
I know, but okay, anyway, he was apparently at this festival the previous year.
Wes Craven was at this festival?
Apparently he's a birder.
Oh, alright.
He was there on the down low. He probably went under his actual name.
Cress Waven?
You don't know his actual name?
No. Apparently you don't either. So I
do
know
his actual name because that's what I always think of when I think of him. But I just happened to see it in someone's directory one day. Okay. So I haven't seen it on the internet. Otherwise, I would say what the alternate name is. But I was just like, oh, wow. So anyway, the scary guy was there.
Oh.
He's a birder. That's awesome. That
makes perfect sense.
But anyway, so I'm trying to think which would be more pressure to have on a field trip, the president of the American Ornithologist Union or...
you are...
Wes Craven.
I think it would be more pressure to have an actual bird on a birding trip.
Yeah. So
there's a chakalaka in the back seat. Act cool.
That would be a lot of pressure to have a chakalaka because they freak out over everything. So speaking of chachalacas, I thought I had winter beat this year.
Right.
You know, I had a trip to Florida. Yep. I was at Space Coast. I had this trip to Klamath Falls, which It was supposed to be in the 40s and 50s, but I was excited about because we have been going through a period of not even being above zero.
It's been absolutely brutal.
It's this winter has been awful. It's broken me. I'm open to moving away from Minnesota, so if anybody has any job offers for either one of us, we don't have to stay here. But that's neither here nor there.
We don't have a section of really crappy jobs you can take in the Philippines for no money, and you have to learn how to shoot bear and...
It's not in the Philippines.
Yeah. Touché.
And it's not bears, it's just really poisonous snakes in New Zealand. So anyway, so I went to Klamath. It's supposed to be dry there and in the 40s. I was super excited.
Sure.
It rained.
Of course
and
it did.
And for me, rain and 40s, it might as well be 20 and snowing. Because rain and damp is just as bad. But especially if you're doing photography stuff. But they needed the rain, so I was glad they got the rain. And then I was like, okay, I'm going to the Rio Grande Valley immediately afterwards, after this trip. It's going to be in the 70s. I get a sore throat.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and I got
I was
sick.
There for that. I don't know why you're telling me.
Well, you were here for it, and yeah. Then we got 10 inches of snow and ice. But so I think winter just has a personal vendetta against everyone this year.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't matter where you go. They're getting a freak storm, or you're just going to get sick when it's remotely nice.
Sure.
But anyway, I was in the Rio Grande Valley. I love Texas. I stayed at the Alamo Inn B&B. I love that place. When you stay at the Alamo Inn... It's geared for birders. I mean, like, mm-hmm. The best part about it is the guy has, like, all this portable food. So you can, like...
I have to say, I hate it when I go to a hotel and all the food is bolted down. Like, there's a big iron steak that you just have to, like, gnaw off of.
No, he has all this food. He even has, like, little tiny cups of hummus.
Uh-huh.
So he even has... I was with a friend
of mine. Worst time was when there was a steak that had, like, a big iron ball attached to it.
If that's not a metaphor for marriage, I don't know what is.
It was extremely unportable food.
Steak with an iron ball attached to it. That's marriage right there.
Mm.
Anyway, but no, he's just, everything is geared for birders. And he makes all of his rooms really super homey.
Mm-hmm.
So you have actual couches in there and each room is personalized. And he has books in there. Just all these crazy books. I found like one of our early acting books that we had in there. And I was like, that is the weirdest book to find in a hotel room is the intro to acting with a not chlamydia. What is that stuff? Candida. You know, that's what it is.
Acting and chlamydia do go together as someone with a master's degree in theater arts.
But you can see why I went to Candide and chlamydia. Well, maybe some of you can. Others of you cannot. I'm sorry. I don't know why you listen to this podcast. We talk about bird news. This is usually what we try to talk about. And chlamydia.
Welcome to the chlamydia cast.
You're not going to get chlamydia staying at the Alamo Inn B&B, but anyway.
But you can read about it.
I want to move into that hotel. I want you to come with me, and we can just live. He's got a resident artist that lives there.
But I don't have chlamydia.
I can take care of that.
Good boy.
Problem solved.
Let's move on quickly, shall we?
Okay.
To our next story.
I might be a little slap happy.
Just a bit.
I'm getting over my cold. I'm tired.
No.
I'm drinking with a dog.
The dog is not drinking.
No, but the dog thinks we're the most exciting people ever because the friend we're your house sitting for is a vegetarian.
Right.
And we frequently come over and grill here.
We grill in the summer.
Yeah. And we have meat and bones. And so we are the most exciting people to this dog who lives with a vegetarian. She's like, oh, you smell like meat and sometimes you give me meat. Anyway. So there are so many stories. I don't think we can get through every single one.
Well, let's just give up.
Okay, I was really kind of hoping to avoid talking about snowy owls, because that's just been a thing.
Yeah, we've talked a little bit about it.
Well, and the whole baiting issue has just gotten out of control. I mean, it's actually made the evening news here in Minnesota about, you know, baiting snowy owls, and not even just whether or not you should throw mice out to them, but there was actually a picture on the WCCO news of somebody with a fishing line and a fake mouse. And it's the fake mouse, I think, is hands down... as far as, like, putting out live mice, I can see both sides of the issue. I would prefer it not. I don't feel comfortable throwing a live mouse out to an owl. But this isn't the blog to debate that. But there was an update today from Project Snowstorm where they have been putting satellite transmitters on owls and the snowy owls. And you can get real-time, up-to-date information about where they are. They have recently stopped doing the live updates. And they're only updating the owl whereabouts with a 3-day delay.
Oh.
And I thought it was because of the baiting issue, because mm-hmm. one of the birds that they have put a transmitter on is being baited. And it's here in right. Minnesota. It's the Ramsey bird. But no, it's another falconry issue.
Oh, dear.
But this is the crazy thing. Okay, so we talked, I think, in the last podcast about the Wisconsin falconer yep. who got
yes,
out of
the snowy. Yes, we discussed that extensively.
According to this update from Project Snowstorm, the falconry laws in Pennsylvania are way more lax than they are up here.
I find that surprising.
I find that surprising, too. And now I'm kind of... because I do hear people every now and then talking about greedy falconers, and I'm just like, all the falconers I know are not greedy. Mm. You know, they can only take birds at certain times. They can only have so many birds. There's only so much they can right. do. The laws in Pennsylvania are quite different.
Oh, that's
and
interesting.
This guy was trying to get several snowy owls. And apparently was using Project Snowstorm to try and get some of the tagged ones.
To what end?
I don't know if the laws are different so he can sell them, or if he was going to try and breed them, or what kind of permit he had. Oh, but it came to a head on the listserv, and the president of the Falconry Association in Pennsylvania was stepping in and saying, whoa, we're not all like this. Even tried to intervene with the falconer mm-hmm. who had, because it was legal in Pennsylvania to right. do this, and say, come on, dude.
I'm surprised that's not federally regulated, frankly.
It's because it's a regional thing.
Mm.
So you, and then also in recent years, the feds have been trying to give more control to the states.
Sure.
Because the bird species vary, so you can't mm-hmm. necessarily sure. have the
okay.
same
fair enough.
Falconry permit for Texas that you could for okay. Minnesota.
Right.
So there are regional differences, and from what I've understand, the laws have been changing in the last few years to give the states more control.
Mm.
But nobody expected a kind of snowy owl eruption no. that we're having. So this guy, the laws are more lax in Pennsylvania, and so he's trying to go out and get a group of snowies. And the president of his association is just like, dude, be cool. Cut this out. And the guy's like, no, it's legal. I can do this. So what's good about this is that, you know, I'm sure there are going to be some changes to the falconry laws in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
It's just one of those cases where, yeah, you could do this, but most falconers are like, no, sure. you shouldn't do this. And what I really like about Project Snowstorm, and I think it's Scott Weidensahl who wrote this update, is he's saying, I'm not bashing falconry. Mm. Some of the people in Project Snowstorm are falconers.
Oh, sure.
This is just a really extreme situation.
No, yeah,
but because of all this, we're just...
I was going to say, who cares? But I guess that kind of sucks for bird watchers who are trying to see these snowy owls.
And yeah, I don't think it's necessarily bad for the...
Well, here's the thing is, like, eBird and stuff, are they still, if people have a sighting, are they still updating?
But it wasn't quite like the real-time maps.
Oh, sure, I know. I mean, it's yeah. like saying that this is where the bird is.
Well, people in eBird sometimes will hide their owl sightings, especially mm. if it's a nest,
right.
until a few months okay. later. And I've had to do that with some of my wind farm stuff, because my bird surveys are considered proprietary right. information to the company
well,
that
I mean,
hires
at
me.
At the same time, I mean, we've known people who are falconers, and they are also breeders.
Oh,
and
yeah, we knew
how
that.
Did they
yeah.
get... I mean, that's how they got their birds.
Not all of... Well, I mean, some of the birds, like the guy that we knew that was a peregrine
right.
breeder, he was not getting them from the wild
right.
because at the time you could not get them. He was just getting them from good stock mm. that was already right. in the world.
I guess this sounds sort of... I don't want to use a pejorative here. I mean, I guess I would need to hear from the guy himself as to why he was doing this. I mean, this sounds like it's uncool, but maybe he had reasons that if we heard from him, it was like, I don't know.
No, it says here, Pennsylvania does not restrict the capture of snowy owls by appropriately licensed falconers.
Well, why would they? Because they never have snowy
yeah,
owls
yeah.
there.
And it caused an incredible ruckus. The president, oh crap, the president of the largest falconry group in the state reached out to the falconer in question and urged him to cease his attempts to catch snowy owls, which the guy did say he eventually agreed to do.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just fascinating. This is an unprecedented situation.
Right. Oh, sure.
And so we're getting extremes of behavior from photographers, birders,
yeah.
and
again,
falconers that would never happen. Because
I would appreciate hearing from this guy and finding out why he was trying to do this. If he had, maybe, you know, because the way that I'm just hearing one side of this, it sounds like it was...
It was legal, so why not?
It was legal, but unethical, but maybe he had reasons. Maybe he was... I don't know.
But one thing that I think is really positive about this, in the past I've always found that falconers have been... They don't want to talk about it because they don't want to...
Oh, sure.
They don't want any heat on them whatsoever.
Yep.
And now there are leaders, like the president of the Wisconsin Falconry Association, mm-hmm. you have the Pennsylvania president saying, hey, this is what we're about. We're not all like this. And I think it's good that lines of communication are open.
Well, I mean, we've talked about this. It's because it's an owl, specifically a snowy owl, which is unusual. If we were having a peregrine invasion and suddenly all these, let's say they had a boom year for peregrines in Canada and suddenly all these peregrines are coming south and they were just everywhere and people were like amazed. And then we heard it might be the same situation if falconers were going out trying to get peregrines, falconers who never had peregrines.
This is interesting that you bring this up because it's only recently that falconers can now trap wild peregrines. Right. And you have to apply for the permit and only so many people get it. It's really hard to get the permit. And even if you get the permit, it's really hard to trap a peregrine.
Right.
I mean, the only person who could probably say, yeah, I can get that peregrine is Frank Nicoletti. And that is because he is an avian savant when it comes to banning birds. He just knows bird behavior.
But that's what I'm saying is that it's because this is unusual.
It's an extreme situation.
I mean, it's not that big a deal if this is, as you say, a boom year for snowy owls.
Yeah.
And is it okay? It's unusual for someone to do this, but is it better that this snowy owl potentially starves to death because, you know, because there are so many of them here? Because as I think I mentioned last time, my concern is, okay, this is a boom year for lemmings, which led to a boom year for snowy owls, and they go back up to the north for breeding grounds, and suddenly it's a crash year.
Well, that's part of what the study is all about. We don't know that. It, apparently, what this is coming down to is not food. It's space.
Yeah.
So there's food out there.
Part of the reason that people are upset about this is it's unusual.
And because it's an owl. Owls are cult status birds. And people get weird with owls. Owls have different rules with everybody than other birds do.
Why do you think that is?
Well, you know, we used to talk about this a lot at the Raptor Center, about how people would relate to owls as opposed to hawks. And part of it is, one of the reasons was owls' eyes are in the front of their face, whereas most birds, the eyes are on the sides of the face. Okay. So owls have kind of a human visage going on. And there's also the whole thing, the wise old owl. Owls are hard to see, so when you finally see one, it's a precious experience when you see one. And just you know, this intimate connection that you have with something that's slow. And you can get close to owls because, like a woodcock or something like that, their defense is to hide, not to get away quickly.
Right.
And then there's a whole thing in there of when you work with birds of prey. When you're working with them in a captivity situation, you learn how to interpret that individual bird's stress. And so when I would work with, let's say, a red-tailed hawk, you would know that bird was stressed by, you know, compressed feathers. It would pant a lot. It would, you know, whereas owls, they wouldn't necessarily do that, although they do pant sometimes, but they tend to internalize the stress. So you don't look at it.
Right.
They just tend to try and hide a little bit more.
Like Norwegians.
Yeah. 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 And they eat lutefisk. Yeah. But so when you see them in the wild and you think, oh, it's okay for me to get close to this owl, let's dig in it. It's probably internalizing that stress.
Right.
So that's why I always tell people, you know, if you're concerned about getting too close to an owl, and this is true if you're trying to photograph any animal, if it's looking at you, you're affecting it.
Hmm.
Don't get any closer to it.
Okay.
You know, if you want to try and approach it, wait till that animal is not looking at you. And then do it slowly. Don't walk directly at it. Don't act like a predator, you know.
Sure.
But, you know, and then you get situations where you get some owls that, I was actually just talking to a photographer, because we were talking about the great gray owl eruption a few years ago, and he was telling me about this northern hawk owl and great gray owl. And he said, yeah, I was like right on top of my vehicle and I was taking a picture and the great gray came and flew right over me and it flew so close to me I actually had to duck. I think it was, you know, it was my wispy hair. And when we were talking about what road it was on, and he said, I think it was in such and such road. And I said, yeah, that was one that was infamously baited and would come over and just sit on people's cars. And the same with a northern hawk owl. So you do get owls that are habituated. And I'm confused with the whole baiting thing because I see why people don't like to bait owls. But at the same time, I went to a ranch at the Rio Grande Valley where we baited in caracaras. We weren't baiting them next to a busy highway, but that's the thing. You sit in a blind and they put out some chicken pieces.
Okay, what's our next story?
Yeah, I just realized we spent like 20 minutes talking about owls and I didn't want to talk about owls.
Ain't that the way.
Okay, so you know our friend Hera?
Yes.
I don't know how to pronounce her last name because she technically
doesn't actually have a last name.
Yeah, but she's... when you look at Facebook and it's here, it's like, I don't even know how to pronounce
it. Jotarsdottir. But that's not actually, she doesn't actually have a last name because she's Icelandic and they don't have family names. She's the daughter of Hjotr.
How do you know how to pronounce that?
Dungeons and Dragons?
Fair enough. Fair enough. But anyway, Hera's great. She was.
She is. She's a fantastic musician. I love her stuff.
Musician of the Year in Iceland?
I think it might have been New Zealand. She's from Iceland, but she lives in New Zealand.
No, that award, that Musician of the Year, that was an Icelandic award. But anyway,
she's fantastic.
She's fantastic. We have her stuff. I always love that song she has, How Much Love Would You Like? It's such a peppy little song.
I like Chameleon Girl myself.
That's a good song, too. But I like... Anyway, look at her stuff on Spotify. I think
it's Hera Sings is her Twitter handle. That may also be her website.
Yeah, but anyway... she sent me a story because she's currently living in New Zealand, and it's a story of a kakapo crushed egg that hatched.
Oh, okay.
And the kakapo is an endangered parrot in New Zealand. It's that crazy bird. I don't know if you remember watching it with Life of Birds. It's this nocturnal... Thank you, Vicious. It's a nocturnal parrot that lives on the ground.
Oh, yeah, I remember this. Yep.
And it kind of makes a little depression and it goes... And they're almost extinct. Oh, that's the bird that famously shagged that friend of Stephen Fry's.
His head, yes. That was a video that went viral about 2 years ago.
Well, it should have.
All right, so they had an egg and it cracked.
And so I'm trying to read the story because it's like, you know, miraculous egg hatches of endangered bird that hasn't hatched that hasn't hatched in 3 years. I'm like, how the heck did the egg get crushed? The female that laid it crushed it like the week it was supposed to hatch. They just went to check the nest. And it's, I mean, I have a picture of it here. Yeah. And I mean, even after the repair they tried to do, you can still see like a piece of it sticking out. So yeah, they tried to use glue and tape. And I thought, oh, please let it be duct tape. But no, it's like that masking tape.
Sure.
And so yeah, they just held it together for a week. Thing hatched.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, they taped it up and they put it in an incubator. I thought, well, let's see what happens. Yeah. We're not going to let the female incubate this anymore. Yeah. So yeah, there is another kakapo that's probably out
first
there.
Year.
The female?
Yeah.
I don't think they breed their first year.
Oh. Well, I mean, it was her first year being a breeding female.
Who knows? Yeah. Who knows? I mean, there are all sorts. I mean, there are some birds that you want to try and bring back. They probably had a limited population to begin with. And...
like the American condor.
The California
example.
Condor is a good example. There are there are some compelling arguments that it was probably going to go extinct without us.
You're going to find out the American condor or the California condor can only survive with meth. You're going to find it out behind the Circle
K. No,
you
know what's going to happen? Yeah. Is there's going to be some Facebook post about how I'm anti-condor.
Oh, God. So happy ending, the chick actually hatched.
Yeah, here's hoping it survives.
Okay.
But I mean, this is also a case of, you know, 75% of the eggs laid. They don't go anywhere.
Good.
You know, but here it's great, this really rare species, and I hope they give it a good name like Cracky or something.
That is probably the worst name that I think I've heard.
Cracky?
Yeah. All right, next story.
You need to know this. March 20th is World Sparrow Day.
Awesome. I'm going to take so many kids out of school to
do
a parade.
You're not going to do a darn thing.
Oh, March 20th. Oh, it's going to be so great. Actually, I'm not allowed to go to near schools after the last World Sparrow Day.
What happened at World Sparrow? Did you teach them how the sparrows hack into bluebird
heads? I led a sparrow parade.
I post this story because I think it's interesting that, you know, how sparrows are...
they are endangered in Europe.
Yes.
Why don't... what's displacing them in Europe?
They don't know. That's the crazy thing.
Because I can't imagine that Europe is less industrialized than America. I assume we're at equal levels, but they're a nuisance bird here.
No, that's the crazy thing. And so here's...
have we tried taking our endangered... maybe if we took a California condor and put it in England, they'd be everywhere.
Well, you know, that has happened with some species. Like, ruddy ducks apparently are a real problem over there. Which, they're really cute, but, you know, not... but, you know, so I post this over here, and you know, North Americans are like, I don't want the house sparrows. We'll send them the house sparrows back. I have a couple
We tried taking the Americanized house sparrows over there and seeing if they're better adapted?
I don't think we can. Because of quarantine laws and whatnot.
Right. What are they going to do, give them rabies?
Mad cow.
Yeah.
I've always wondered if, you know, the house sparrows we have, if that's just hardier stock. Because, you know, birds that came over in the 1850s on a boat.
I would be interested in someone who is an ornithologist and or a geneticist talking about the differences between American, European sparrows.
Yeah, that, I mean, there's definitely some kind of difference there, but...
if their behaviors are different or...
Here's something to think about. Okay. Is that, okay, let's say they do go extinct. We have to be stewards to a species we don't like that wreaks havoc on some of our own.
Oh, I think if they went extinct, they would eventually just take the European, the American sparrows.
Do a captive breeding program. Yeah. And
do, I would be interested. I'm sure somebody's thought of that. I'm sure somebody is studying this, especially if it's an endangered species. I'm sure somebody has gotten a grant to figure this out. You know,
we just need to wait till somebody does the extinction of the passenger
If you're a European listening to this, and apparently you have some European... talk to us about, send Sharon a letter at sharon@birdchick.com about what's displacing them or what's killing them off. If it's like a disease or something. I imagine it has to be like a disease.
I think I saw a thing on Birds of North America online. One of my favorite things to do with that site is to look at areas that need further study.
Mm-hmm.
And for house sparrows, one of the things they were looking at was post-breeding dispersal. So mm-hmm. like where they go after they learn how to fly.
Mm-hmm.
And wondering if maybe that has something to do with it.
I don't, when you were in Paris, did you see a lot of sparrows around?
No.
Really?
No. The only place that I have seen house sparrows has been Germany, and it was around the airport.
Huh. Okay.
And I saw them in Kazakhstan. I think I saw them in there are a bunch of sparrows that kind of look like the house sparrows. Oh, I saw the Eurasian
the
tree
devil
sparrow.
You say there are a bunch of sparrows that look like house sparrows? I had no idea.
The Dead Sea Sparrow was actually really quite cool.
Uh-huh.
it looked like a house sparrow, but not quite, but it was just cool. And I just love the name, Dead Sea Sparrow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, what's our next story?
Anyway, World Sparrow Day. Are you going to do anything Day. For World Sparrow
I am going to lead, I'm going to take children out of school and lead them on a parade.
No, you're celebrate. Not.
I am.
Did we, even our friends who have kids and know us, they and I say, hey, we're happy to take your kids. They never leave their kids around us. Oh, did I tell you the story? Okay, so when on the rare occasions when both Bill and I go out of town, we have to give our rabbit to a woman who watches him. Right. And she has... Dougal is a large rabbit. He's 8 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
But she has Flemish giants, and they're like 12 to 14-pound rabbits. They're like twice the size of Dougal. But Dougal, like, he has size issues and likes to fight with one of them. But Aaron's really nice and Dougal.
They don't fight. They do posturing. Let's be clear about that.
They grunt at each
other. Yeah, exactly.
It's not friendly grunting.
Right.
But anyway, she sends me a text message the other day that says, oh, hey, Hurley and Andre are going to get either a brother or a sister this October. I'm like, OMG, you're getting another Flemmy? Bill's going to be so jealous. And she's like, I hope I'm not producing a Flemmy. I hope it's a human child. And I was like, I just automatically assumed when someone tells me they're getting a sibling.
Your pets, when you say your pets are getting a brother or sister, that's not an unfair assumption.
Well, the fact, the timing of it, and, right. you know, well, and I'm pretty sure she actually probably did put in the initial check text, human, brother or sister, and I just, like, just assumed that it was a Flemish. Anyway. But anyway, I was like, hey, you know, since you, like, watch Dougal for us all the time, you can totally, like, use this for babysitting night, you know, and it, that was just glossed over, and it's like, yay, thank you for the congratulations, like, you can trust it. I give kid programs at the park service. I can be trusted with children for short amounts of time. I can be appropriate.
Right.
I'll wear my park service uniform. It's like, as soon as I put that on, it's like... Anyway.
All right, what else we got?
Somebody attached a GoPro camera to a pelican beak in Africa.
Of course you do.
Like you would.
Yeah, as one does.
As one does. Now, apparently this was an injured pelican, and these were some rehabbers, and they were test flying it, and they're like, hey, we have this GoPro camera. Mm-hmm. Let's put it on the pelican.
That actually makes sense. You want to see how the bird's wings are doing.
Oh, see, I was going to, like, make fun of this, because, like, they put the camera on the beak, but they put it aiming at the bird's head.
Right.
And it's like, why wouldn't you put it facing out so you can see what the bird can see? Because they want to see how...
If the bird is injured, you want to see how its wings are
going. That makes total sense.
That didn't occur to you.
That didn't occur to me. I just thought it was kind of a cool video. And I was like, why did they aim it at the bird body?
Oh, boy. It took me less than a second once you said the bird was injured.
It had been, yeah. And it flies really well. But what's really cool is, because it's attached to the head,
right.
the head stays... rock solid.
Sure.
And the whole body is moving around it. So it's cool just to watch for that end of it. But
my distinct, my best memory of that was we were watching some PBS documentary about raptors and the way their wings work. And they put a small camera on the back of a red tail to fly it, to see, you know, to see what the hawk sees when it's flying. And the first thing the red tail did was turn around, look at the camera, and attack it.
That's right. It tried to preen the camera off. To preen it, like, what the heck is that back there?
All right, next story.
Swarovski has a couple of contests, Swarovski Optic.
Mm-hmm.
One is their campfire birding series.
Okay.
So they're calling for all nature watchers. What is your reason for watching birds and other wildlife? So if you have a story to share, like you would share around a campfire series.
There was a bird that was missing a wing and replaced it with a golden wing.
We should write a bird horror story and submit it under a fake name.
We should not do that.
Yes,
that
we should. That's a great idea. No, write it like, you know, it's like, that bird's been dead for 30 years.
Yeah, there was a guy driving and he saw a bird hitchhiking. And he picked it up.
It was
and
the a next chachalaka. Day,
yes, he found his jacket on the bird's grave.
No, the bird has a hook.
The bird has a hook for it. They found that, yes, a bird escaped from the zoo, and one of its feet had been replaced with a hook.
With a hook!
That's really great. And if you look in the mirror three times and say...
Chachalaka!
Was it red-necked phalaro three times? It appears behind you and kills you.
Somebody needs to read. I wish I had something to give away. I don't have. Well, I have some books to give away. Yeah. Maybe I could ask for a new Sibley. Can I have an extra Sibley? So that way I can give it away for a prize for someone writing a horror story.
The worst idea in the world.
Write a horror story, and if it's really good, I'll read it on a separate podcast. It'll just be your horror story if it's right. Good, and then I'll give you something because I've got a ton of stuff to give away.
Yeah, that's great. This is
I'll give you some.
Why don't we formalize the plans and talk about this in the next podcast?
The problem is that okay so if you have a legit nature story,
yeah, let's get back to the actual story here.
You could win a pair of SLC binoculars from Swarovski, and these are really cool binoculars. I got to see them in Sweden. Mm-hmm. SLCs are cheaper than the ELs, which are the ones that I use.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really great binoculars. You get all the great things. The main difference between like the SLCs and the ELs that I use is that you can't close focus as well with these. Whereas I think with my ELs, I can look at something 6 feet away.
Right.
Whereas with the SLCs, you can look at something.
Oh, like... I saw those. I saw those when we were in Baltimore.
Yes, you did.
Yeah, we were at
yeah,
that blog.
Yeah. And so basically because... that technology of not looking at things super close is there, they're able to knock the price off like $1,000. So it's a really good binocular. And really, if you're thinking, well, I really want that 6 feet thing, you know, here's what the 6 foot difference is. If you're someone who's like really into watching butterflies and dragonflies and you want that close focus thing, if you could...
If your neighbor lives 6 feet away.
If your neighbor lives 6 feet away. But I mean, yeah, if you're someone who's really not that into... butterflies and dragonflies, don't worry about that close focus thing. I hardly ever use the close focus on my ELs. Mm. But I love my ELs because I love the way they fit in my hand. But anyway, or you could enter this contest and maybe win some SLCs, which are really cool rugged binoculars.
All right.
They're lightweight, but they're big. So you could, if someone tries to mug you, you could really do some damage with an SLC.
Next story.
Oh, there's another contest, and I have to keep mentioning this because it's one of the things I've been working on. It's a web series with Swarovski. And so we're going to do 8 episodes, and we're going to give you birding/digiscoping tips in these with me and my buddy Clay Taylor.
Right.
And it's going to be funny because I've actually like written some dialogue for us.
Some laugh-em-ups.
I sent a rough cut to some of the guys at Swarovski, and they're like, how did you make Clay funny? I was like, Clay is naturally funny. But there's a theme to the series. And the birds in each episode are a clue to that theme.
Okay.
So after you watch a few episodes, or maybe you have to watch all of it, you should watch all of it because it's going to be funny. And we have some really cool bird footage. You can email me what you think the series theme is. And if you're correct, you could win a spotting scope. So I'm dealing with that contest. I want to do the horror story contest, but...
Yeah, we'll have more information on that actual thing that is actually happening as it becomes closer.
It's really fun. I really hope that it works out well because I would like to make more web series. And I'm excited because Swarovski is obviously sponsoring it since they're giving stuff away. But we got Princeton University Press on as a sponsor. And we have Birdseye on as a sponsor, who are the people who do the really cool apps. Those are when people ask me what my favorite apps are, I love the Birdseye app, the bird finding app. And so we're probably going to be giving away some apps with those too. So I'm really excited that we have some good sponsors for that. Anyway. Selfies with bald eagles.
Oh, yes. I saw that. I was going to send that to you, and then I figured you'd already seen it.
Yeah. So some chick who clearly works at some sort of raptor center aimed her phone and got the eagle talking and got her head in there. And it's really cute.
Yeah.
I bet she got called on the carpet for it.
Now, is that the one that has the captions on it?
Mm-mm.
Oh, because see, I saw one. Is that just one picture there that you have there?
It's a series of three photos, but there were no captions.
See, when I saw it, it was three pictures, and it was like the eagle was telling her a joke, and then at the end, they both turned towards the camera with their mouth open like, eh? Like the thing people had about moray eels always look like they're waiting for you to laugh at a punchline.
Yes.
Yes.
I love this. I think it's hilarious, it's a cute thing, and I'm sure she knows the eagle and she did it well, but I'm just thinking back to my days when I used to volunteer, and I did work for a little while at the Raptor Center, and I'm just thinking, like, whoever is in charge of their birds or whoever is in charge of that, he's like, that's really funny, but I wish that hadn't gone out to the public. No, people get weird. People that work with birds of prey.
People get weird, but there's not anything wrong with taking a picture of yourself with a bald eagle. She's not.
I've worked with a lot of different organizations.
Mm-hmm.
I've worked at a number of places and volunteered at a number of places where I worked with live birds of prey. And when I was brought on, it's like, you do know I take pictures and sometimes I post these on the internet and things like that. And I remember there was one organization specifically that I won't name, but one of their employees got mad because I violated a penguin's right to medical privacy.
I remember that. Not a joke, ladies and gentlemen.
That was not a joke. And the phone call that I got, the wording that was used, and I was like, I can easily take this down. That's not a problem. But being taken on the carpet for violating this penguin's right to privacy, the wording was hilarious. And then I kept thinking the whole time, it's like, I'm really glad I didn't mention that this penguin was also in a same-sex pairing for dozens of years. Actually, another thing that recently that's happened is... some of the things that I've done over the years, I've participated in...
ritual murder?
No. Some of these raptor-type facilities that have birds of prey that never go out in the wild, they can be falconry birds, they can be injured birds, but you pose them in natural situations, and photographers can take pictures and then try to edit out the jesses and Photoshops. I don't like doing these types of... because I'm just like, just go out in the wild and take pictures of the birds. You know, it's because otherwise you're just going to have to spend time editing out the jesses and things like that. But there was one facility, and the guy who was in charge, and his birds were impeccable. I mean, they were in great condition. You could tell this guy took really good care of his birds. But he was saying, now, if you take any of these photos, don't put them on Facebook, Twitter, or Flickr and tag my organization in them. If you want to do that, send the photos to me first because I want to make sure that everything looks good and is on the up and up. And I was thinking,
this man lived in 1973.
This was within the last 6 months. Yeah, and I'm like, that is such a naive attitude. And I was like, nobody. I was like, okay, so you just said Twitter, Facebook, and Flickr. So it's okay if I put this on Instagram, right? Tumblr? That's
MySpace.
Okay. MySpace. Aw, who uses MySpace
Friendster.
Still?
Actually, a lot of people use MySpace.
You know, some of those social media things, like Zanga, I think. I was on that for a while because my nieces were on it.
Zanga. Oh, yes.
That thing with an X.
Yeah.
They're popular in other countries. It's like, you know, maybe Western countries don't want them anymore, but maybe some other country that's newer to social media is like, oh, hey, this rocks.
Very cool. Cute that you're telling me this.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Did I tell you somebody emailed me today? They're like, I'm looking for young birders. What blogs would they have?
Yeah.
And I'm just like, young birders don't have blogs. Yeah. There are probably some that have them. And they may be...
What Usenet groups are the young birders on?
I'm like, no, they're on different social... And I said, I'm going to name some social media. Yeah. They're already off this because they don't want fogies like me on it. You know, there's probably like a whole passel of young birders on Snapchat.
Oh, I'm sure. Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know if Snapchat would work for birding.
It'd work great for owl sightings because they would go away really quickly.
Fair enough.
But, you know, they're on Tumblr. They're on they're basically wherever there's no adult.
I think you mean the Tumblr.
The Tumblr, yeah. The social medias. But it's like, young birders are out there.
Oh, yeah.
They are doing everything they can to avoid anyone my age and above. Actually, they're doing everything they can to avoid people 10 years younger than me.
Well, you just need to catch them at the World Sparrow Day Parade that I will be leading.
Actually, Keith was really cute. The guy that runs the Alamo Inn Bed and Breakfast,
He's
super nice. But he was telling me, he's like, I just had somebody book a room. And they said they had read about me on your website. And they sounded like they were 60. I thought I'd be getting young people. And I was like, oh.
Yeah.
I'm not that young, Keith. The turkey vulture at the Raptor Center, We're the same age. 40.
All right, what else we got?
This is something that we got from our friend comedian Brandy Brown.
Okay.
This has to be from your town. In Ashland? It doesn't say what state.
Ashland is very near where I grew up.
Well, it says Ashland.
Well, there are many Ashlands.
So. I'm going to assume it's Ohio. Yeah. But it says, police responded to a report of two dogs running loose and attacking ducks. The officer cited a resident for loose dogs. The duck refused medical treatment or press charges.
I saw that and I laughed a lot about that. I think I actually read that to you. I completely understand why that line was in there, because otherwise they would be getting so many calls. What happened to the duck?
Yes.
Even Vicious is very upset about this right now.
She must be part of the podcast. Okay, here's another thing. There's a wildlife photographer in Florida.
Okay.
Named Jim Niger.
Okay.
He entered a guilty plea for violating the Endangered Species Act. So, you say, what would a photographer get in trouble for violating the Endangered Species Act?
Many things leap to mind, but go ahead.
Okay. So, apparently, he was taking people out to photograph hook-billed kites, which are endangered in Florida. Because they're the things that eat the snails and blah, blah, blah. And, oh, wait, no. Hook-billed kite is what I see when I'm in Texas. These would be snail kites in Florida.
Do you know what you're talking about?
Yeah, I'm talking about kites. But I was getting my species confused because hook-billed kites are all over in Mission, Texas. It was really exciting. Anyway, but anyway, so this guy was taking people out in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And snail kites are endangered because they eat a specific kind of snail.
Yes.
They eat a certain kind of snail.
And the snail is also endangered.
Yeah, there's it's a whole thing. Is it, you know, it's just a good idea not to put all your edible eggs in one basket. Yeah. Don't specialize in one kind of foods. Eat a lot of different things.
Right.
Otherwise, you're going to end up endangered.
Right.
So he wanted to get flight shots.
Mm-hmm.
So he would continually flush the kites.
Ooh, that's a bad idea.
And researchers witnessed this at least 8 times.
Ooh.
And it's very telling that there are like 8 times that he did this, and that's how he finally got prosecuted.
Right.
But yeah, it's, yeah. So I thought that was interesting.
Habitual.
Yeah, and it's interesting that he chose to plead.
So what was his penalty?
I don't think a penalty was named in this article.
Okay.
You know, it's always, with all these, it's like, oh, well, you know, you could get 1 year in prison or a $100 fine. I'm sure there's going to be some kind of plea bargaining. Because if he's pleading guilty, that tells me, like, dude, we have you on this.
Right.
How much money do you want to pay? Why don't you just plead guilty? No one really knows who you are and is going to care anyway.
Okay.
Birders care. I shouldn't say no one is going to care. But the fines just really aren't that much. It's like a speeding ticket, really, at the end of the day.
Mm.
And if you have really good photos, you know, crisp, clear, tack sharp images, you know, and it's in good light, then, you know, a magazine's not going to pay attention as to whether or not now you got that photo. And that's one of the issues with photography. People say, magazines need to start not paying photographers. And it's like, well, they're not going to pay attention to that. They're just going to see a pretty image that's got a good composition. And oh my gosh. So, I've been having lots of conversations with photographers lately.
Okay.
Photography versus art. I was at I was at an art show at the Klamath Falls Bird Festival.
Right.
There was a woman there who I actually bought one of her prints. It was really quite striking. She drinks a lot of tea. So, she takes the tea bags and she puts that down and she uses that as the foundation for her work.
Right. You showed me her stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. But everybody was calling her the tea bag lady. And I was like, can we not call her that?
Right.
But
her stuff was really cool.
We
should put a link up on the entry for this.
Now I'm going to have to. Now I wish I hadn't talked about it because I'm too lazy to put up a link. But I'm going to put up a link because I like her stuff.
Too lazy to put up a link is the definition of too lazy.
I just sounded like George Jetson.
You did.
Because I remember there was like an episode where he was getting up in the morning, and there were two things he was complaining about, but he had to go to work for like 3 days a week.
Right.
And
he had to push a button about something.
And it was like his exercise button to watch the exercise tape. And he's laying in bed saying, oh, my life is so hard. And I was like, oh, yeah. I remember thinking as a kid, it's like, that's what's going to be like in the future. Yeah, and here I am saying, I'm too lazy to put up a link to
copy
this.
And paste.
Copy and paste. To literally
press five buttons.
Well, the problem is that I don't have her artwork right here in front of me. And we're at someone else's house. And I can't remember her name. So I'm going to have to walk home and look up her name.
Because
I'm pretty sure I can't just Google teabag lady.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure if I Google teabag lady, I'm going to get some unsavory results.
Wow.
If I find the link, I'll put it up. Her stuff is really cool. It's really quite striking.
But not striking enough to do a 2-minute Google search.
It's not going to take 2 minutes because you know what happens. I want you to Google teabag lady right now and you tell me the horrific thing you're going to find.
I will probably Google something that will actually give the result.
Continue
with what you were talking about.
Oh, crap. Okay, I can't keep talking about everything that I have been putting on the Facebook page because that's usually what I use for news for the podcast, and I've just been gone too long. But I do have to link to one thing because it is going to go away very soon.
Sure.
Okay. The birding community has just finally discovered Dysfunctional Family Circus.
Oh, wow. That's ancient.
I know. So, Bill, chances are good there are birders listening to this who don't know what Dysfunctional Family Circus is.
Dysfunctional Family Circus was a very old website. It is no longer extant.
I think you looked at this when we were in Indiana.
Oh, I contributed to this. I loved it. It was my favorite site.
But I mean,
on
this is like 10 years
old.
Oh,
yeah.
Stuff.
This is
fantastic.
This is like dinosaur age in internet terms. They would take Family Circus cartoons and people could submit their own captions. It got extremely scatological and also extremely funny. It was one of my favorite sites. And then Bill Keen and United King Features dropped the ban hammer on them and it went away. But it was by far one of the funniest things.
But it kept coming back.
Yeah.
There would these, you were just like, hey, you know, dysfunction. And it wasn't even Dysfunctional Family. It was DFC. DFC's back, man. And so people would go to that. And then, of course, Keen and his lawyers would just, you know, put down their righteous hammer. And I had mixed feelings about it. I mean, on the one hand, I understand if you have an attachment to your characters, you don't want people doing this. But on the other hand, it made your stuff so popular.
Sure.
Just let it go. You cannot stop this. So anyway, there's a Facebook group that is doing this with birding stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at it the first day. And like one of them was, which is not... Okay, Billy is the blonde, right?
Yeah.
And Jeffy is the brunette. So
Jeffy has sort of the bacon shaped hair.
The bacon
hair. Well, it's black and white cartoon, so it's not.
But when they were in color, he was kind of a brunette.
Fair enough,
yeah. Okay. So Jeffy with the bacon hair, the curly hair, he's looking at his mom and somebody gave her a Crossley ID. It just says, dude, seriously?
That's great.
But it's like, there's another one when Jeffy comes home and he's crying. And it's like, the homeowner withdrew permission because some a-holes were knocking on his door at 6 a.m.
Hilarious.
And then there's another one when Jeffy is talking to the grandma. It's like, I wouldn't worry about that blown call. No one will believe anything you report until you're 30 anyway. I mean, they're truths that we've all been... There's one where Billy is talking to... Is it Sally? What's the girl's
Dolly.
Name? Dolly. I'm sorry.
Sally is Charlie Brown's sister.
I was also thinking, I think, of Sally Forth. Yes, but did you see the Buffy edges in the inner secondaries? That's really the only reliable way to separate... Anyway, it's just funny.
Real knee slappers, kids.
They're real hardcore birding knee slappers. It's going to go away soon, so check it out.
Okay.
I just thought it was hilarious. And,
all right. Dude. So I did a very quick Google search. Is the artist named Kim Henkel? Is this her stuff?
I don't recall seeing that bird in her stuff.
Okay. But does this look like her stuff?
No.
No. Okay. Well, that's probably someone else. But anyway, that was, you know.
Yeah, that's not even a North American species.
All right, well, I'm just saying
that. All her stuff, because the thing that I bought was a sharp shintock. And okay. She had, like, she had a really cool blackbird print, and it was both red-winged and tri-colored.
Okay.
She had a chestnut-backed
chickadee. Well, maybe you should search for this Google.
I was going to talk about this when I actually had her stuff in front of me. Now, this interferes with my plan to podcast quickly.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah, quickly.
Well, we just have a lot of podcasting to catch up on. All right.
We need to wrap this up because we're already at an hour.
Are we at an hour? Okay, let's just wrap this up because I can't remember what else I talked about. And I've already gone through news that I've been posting for the last week.
So this is Bird Chick Podcast number 165. If you have any questions about the stories we've talked about, go to birdchick.com.
Oh!
God! You always do this.
I do always do this, but you reminded me when you said if you have any questions.
You have a question for yourself that you're going to answer here on
the podcast. But sometimes if you're listening to this podcast and you want to send me a question, something that just happened recently. I got an email out of the blue the other day. I'm just going to leave this person's name out of it. And it's like, I'm sorry to have to tell you this, but Drew Barrymore is not the source of the statement, a fish may love a bird, but where would they live? The question was put by Tevye to his youngest daughter. What was his youngest daughter's name? Shivala?
I don't know.
Okay. Anyway, it was a quote from Fiddler on the Roof. Anyway.
And you felt that now was an appropriate time to bring this up.
No, the reason why I bring this up was I got this, and he copied it on a bunch of other people who I didn't know. And I just hit reply all. I was like, I have absolutely no idea what you're talking about. And he's like, oh, it's from an article that you wrote on 10,000 Birds. And so I just did a Google search for this with Drew Barrymore's name, my name and Drew Barrymore's name, and I found it's like an article from a few years ago, and it wasn't even like something I wrote. It was just a quote that randomly generated on the 10,000 Birds site, and I was like, so if you have a question, keep in mind you may be listening to this podcast 2 years from now.
We may be dead.
We very well could be, especially with some of the stupid things I do. So, like
interrupting me when I'm trying to wrap up the podcast.
You wouldn't hurt me for that.
That's true.
So anyway, when you're asking me questions or taking me to task for something, maybe put a link to what you're taking me to task to so I can figure it out. Because sometimes it's just like, you've been having a conversation with me in my head and I have no idea. But I did kind of feel for this guy.
I'm having a conversation with you in my head right now.
Because I get like being misquoted because it's like, that's how I feel when I'm watching a movie and the cowboys are in the desert and all of a sudden they hear a loon. Although I thought it was funny because he was like, that's like attributing Shakespeare to YouTube.
You know what I'm just going to start
I'd rather listen recording to YouTube than Shakespeare.
Wrap-ups when you're not in the room.
Okay.
I'm going to send you out for cigarettes or something so that I can actually wrap this up.
Neither one of us smokes.
I don't care.
You're going to send me for an e-cig since we have one of those shops down the street. Why don't you send me out for like tiramisu.
We need to stop this. All right, Bird Chick Podcast number 165. Bye.